listening to Musically Speaking on 91.9 KVCR. My name is Margaret Worsley, and I'm Associate Professor of Music at San Bernardino Valley College, talking today with Ransom Wilson, flutist, professor, and conductor of the Redlands Symphony. Maestro Wilson will fill us in on some of the 2023 season highlights, with special focus on their upcoming performance on Saturday, April 8th. We'll discuss the music of William Grant Still, Tchaikovsky, and Beethoven. We'll also learn why everyone is excited about the new executive director of the Redlands Symphony, Kevin Eberle Knoll. Maestro Wilson, welcome back to Musically Speaking.
Thank you.
Let's start, if you could, of giving us an overview of the season for the Redlands Symphony.
We started the season with a really great concert of all-American music. We opened with this Elmer Bernstein National Geographic fanfare, which we had the worst time getting the music. It's the theme to the National Geographic show that everybody knows.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great fanfare. It's very short, but it's a great fanfare. You know, a couple of years ago when I realized that William Grant Still was being underprogrammed all over the country, and when I found out also, this is important, I found out that he was in fact the first person to play compose a jazz piece for the concert hall. But because he was black, he was not given the credit for it, and it went to Gershwin.
Mm.
But 6 months before Gershwin, William Grant Still had a piece, one of his best pieces, actually. So at that point, I remember telling the audience, I'm dedicating myself to programming as much William Grant Still as I can.
That's fantastic.
And so I try to put him on every single season.
Mm.
And that concert also had a ballet of his called Miss Sally's Party, which is, you know, jazz-based, completely delightful.
Nice.
Then we had the John Adams Saxophone Concerto with Patrick Posey, who's a local player now. He lives in Hollywood, who plays regularly with L.A. Phil and San Francisco Symphony, et cetera, et cetera. But the John Adams Saxophone Concerto is, I think it's the hardest piece that the Redlands Symphony has ever done. It's extremely abstract and uncompromising.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it probably shocked a lot of the audience because of the nature of it. It just kind of assaults you mm-hmm. for 25 minutes.
Oh, it's so challenging. I can't even wrap my brain around how hard
that
is.
Yeah. It is really hard. But I'm happy that I asked Pat, the soloist, if he could also do Summertime as an encore.
Oh, nice.
And that he did so beautifully and improvised over the melody, and it was so great that the audience gave him a standing ovation. So even though they had to endure the Adams as an unfamiliar and difficult piece, they absolutely adored Summertime. So that was great.
That is awesome.
Then we had Joan Tower's Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman.
Mm.
I just love the title because it's obviously a riff on Fanfare for the Common Man. She's written six of these now. We did the first one. It's exciting, and you hear it a lot, actually, programmed on classical radio. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had to end with Copland, so we ended up with Rodeo.
Nice.
Let's see, our second concert was... Oh, yeah, we did a Nutcracker in concert. So we did the entire score, which you never hear, and... You know, the full orchestration is wonderful. It's a huge orchestra, it's triple winds, triple everything. But it's so colorful and so exciting to hear, because when we hear in the ballet, nobody can afford to have the full orchestra in the pit. So you always hear reductions. So this was really exciting, and we got Ryan Lauritsen from KUSC to be our narrator.
Nice. Oh my
and
gosh, that's
he,
amazing.
Yeah, it was nice. I wrote the narration based on the original E.T.A. Hoffman fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the fairy tale is different in places from the ballet, because
mm-hmm.
they used that as their basis, but then they made it work for ballet. So I had to write a lot of stuff. And my challenge was just to stay in the right style
mm-hmm.
as the original. But it came off really well. And Brian was great, of course.
That is awesome.
If
you're just joining us, this is Musically Speaking. We're chatting with Ransom Wilson from Redland Symphony. The next concert in our world right now is going to be Triumph of the Human Spirit, I believe, the March concert, which will have aired or will have happened prior to this airing. But do you want to talk about it anyway with
sure.
Anne-Marie McDermott?
Yes. It opens with one of my favorite overtures, which you don't hear very often, the overture to Verdi's Nabucco.
Mm.
And it fits in this program because Nabucco has a chorus of Hebrew slaves.
Mm.
They're lamenting that they're away from their homeland, and they're prisoners of a foreign entity, and that really resonated with the Italian people at the time it was written,
mm-hmm.
Because they were trying to get rid of the Austrians and the French, and they started this movement called Il Risorgimento, the resurgence,
mm-hmm.
and it eventually resulted in a united Italy in, I think, 1871.
Right.
But it started, you know, 10 years before. And as soon as Italian people heard this chorus of Hebrews from Nabucco, they took that as their theme song. So to the Italians, when they hear this, it fills them with national pride.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect thing. And it happens to be a great overture.
Yeah, it's incredible. My husband and I saw Nabucco when it played a few years ago at LA Opera, and the whole thing was just incredible. I would imagine that piece, that work, Nabucco, really elevated Verdi himself as a national hero, didn't it?
It did, and it was his. I think it was only his third opera, but first of all, he kind of hit his stride as a composer with that piece. But also, yes, it made him an international star.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love that. So what else would be on that program, the March program?
So we were originally going to do a commissioned work that we had to delay. I thought, well, what are we going to do that fits the theme? And then I realized that Prokofiev is actually Ukrainian. At the time he was born, he was, you know, it was part of it became part of the Soviet Republic, but he was actually Ukrainian born. So obviously we're all doing everything we can to help Ukraine. So I thought, well, that's a great connection. And his greatest of all piano concertos, in my view, is number three. So I called Anne-Marie McDermott, an old friend and colleague who has recorded all of Prokofiev's piano works. So I knew it would be a great match, and she was incredible, as always.
That's wonderful.
And that's one of those pieces that I think is like a real masterpiece. And by saying that, I mean that it appeals on many different levels,
mm-hmm.
and it seems very complete. When you finish that piece, you've gone through an entire deep experience. You know, you've had elation, you've had sadness, you've had romance, and of course you've had drama, and then it ends triumphantly. So it's the kind of piece that there aren't that many of.
Mm.
And, so it's always a great experience to go through it. We close with the Fourth Symphony of Tchaikovsky. Again, it fits the theme of Triumph of the Human Spirit, because in many ways it represented Tchaikovsky finally finding himself. I mean, he had written, you know, obviously three symphonies before this, but none of them kind of came together as an organic whole. they all have wonderful, wonderful things in them. But he had trouble fitting his music into the expectations of Western classical structure.
Right.
And it took him a while to realize that he just wasn't that person. And his music was too emotional to fit it into that mold. So with the Fourth Symphony, he finally found the way to make his music work in the symphonic form, and it is one of the greatest symphonies ever written.
That
and
is
one of my favorites. I've done it many times. I love it.
What a treat! What a treat for Redland Symphony performers and audiences. That's just amazing. We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back to hear more about Ransom Wilson's program with the Redland Symphony here on Musically Speaking. I'm Margaret Worsley. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Musically Speaking with me, Margaret Worsley. I'm chatting today with Ransom Wilson about their upcoming performance at the Redland Symphony. Ransom, I'd love to deep dive a little bit into the April concert, the one featuring Beethoven. You are starting, it looks like, with Leonore Overture No. 3. And how do I ask this respectfully? Is it weird to have three overtures? Do you know why we have three?
I do. In fact, I understand there are actually four.
Oh, my gosh.
And because they've kind of recently discovered another version of one of them. Leonora, obviously Beethoven's only opera, and it started out with a different title. It started out, Leonora was the original title, and then it became Fidelio.
Right.
He just had trouble finding the right overture. So the one that ended up with the opera is we call the Fidelio Overture. You know, it works very, very well for the opera. It's not as popular as a concert work. I love it. But along the way, he tried other overtures, Leonore's Overtures 1, 2, and 3. And number 3 is a profound work. Mm-hmm. And it was actually just too heavy to open the opera, because the opera itself opens with a very light, happy scene,
mm-hmm.
Having to do with a clothesline and a young man and woman. And I've actually conducted the opera, but I can't remember why that scene is even significant. I think it's there just to, you know, like Shakespeare often does, has a comedic scene right before the tragic one. And I think it's there just to start out in a light way. And so the Leonore Overture, the Overture No. 3, was just too massive and too dark to open the opera. It's got in it the theme that the prisoner whom Leonora Fidelio is going to rescue,
mm-hmm.
he's in his jail cell, and he sings this amazing aria, and the overture has that theme in it. So it's a major work, and it's very often inserted into the opera as a prelude to Act 2.
Instead of an overture?
Beethoven,
or...
No, and yeah, there is no overture to Act Two, but people, you know, this is such significant music, and by that point, the opera has become very dark. So, a lot of people just insert that as an overture to the second part,
Yeah, that makes sense.
which works great, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. You're also performing. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was moving on to the triple concerto.
Yeah, I was just going to say you're performing Beethoven's Triple Concerto with Trio Arbal, of which pianist David Kaplan is a member, and we love David Kaplan. We can't wait to hear this chamber ensemble. Can you describe to us a little bit of just the nature of the trio's role? Will they be playing by themselves or with the orchestra?
Let me back up a little bit because when I got this job here in Redlands, I was contacted independently by three of my favorite young soloists, and they happened to be Semyon Semyonov, we call him Moni, Eric Byers, who's in the Calder Quartet, and David Kaplan. And they all said, "Look, I will come and support the orchestra. I'll do a recital for free."
Oh my gosh.
All of them, and separately, without knowing about each other. And then I thought, well, okay, that's nice, but maybe I can program them too. And I realized, wait, there's a violin and a piano and a cello, so that's perfect for the Beethoven triple. So that's how we came to this. And in fact, I built the whole program around the Beethoven triple.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's an odd work. It's the only successful trio concerto. Other people have tried with various combinations, but only Beethoven could really pull it off. It's funny, sometimes they play by themselves, not that often. Most often, one of them will play with the orchestra. It has a huge cello part, and many people call it the Beethoven cello concerto as a result.
Nice.
But they all have their solo moments throughout. And occasionally they play together, but you know, without the orchestra, but not that often. So it's more like a sinfonia concertante from the 18th century, where it's about, you know, brilliance. And in my estimation, it's not among Beethoven's greatest concertos, because what Beethoven was really amazing at was depicting the one against the many. He had this the kind of sense of the individual being oppressed by the majority. And that really resonated with him. I think this concerto was difficult for him. It's a wonderful piece, but I think it doesn't really, I don't think it resonated with him as say the piano concertos did or the violin concerto did.
That's so interesting. I'm just thinking about Beethoven's personality and how he was kind of known to be antisocial, and I wonder about him having friends. I don't want to spread dirty rumors about him, but like, how do you write music for friends, like a chamber ensemble, if you're kind of a recluse and antisocial?
Yeah, and you know, I don't really know the circumstances of why this piece was written. I need to educate myself. I've done it a few times. I've heard it many times. I've heard wonderful performances of it. It just doesn't sound like Beethoven's completely comfortable while he's writing it. Having said that, it's Beethoven, and there's very little bad Beethoven, so.
Agreed. Well, I can't wait to hear it. You're also performing Beethoven's Symphony No. 8, which is in my at least top two favorites, mostly because of the clarinet solos, but there are other fun things within this symphony. Can you elaborate a little bit on why this Symphony No. 8 is special?
Well, you know, it's not in most people's top 10 or top 9, I should say, because it's kind of odd. I mean, it comes after the seventh, which is just this shining, glowing monument to Western culture. And then the ninth, which of course is transcendental and single-handedly changes what a symphony means, and leaves people so inspired that they can't believe it. And so eight falls in the middle, and he was very smart to do something completely different from seven. It harkens back to, say, the first symphony. It sounds very classical. At least when you first hear it, you think, oh, it sounds almost like a Haydn symphony. But if you look closely, you see that it's actually quite innovative in itself. As an example, the second part of the menuet was Stravinsky's favorite piece of Beethoven because of the rhythmic complexity of it. So it has things like that. Of course, it's a Beethoven symphony, and it's extremely exciting. Mm-hmm. The last movement is amazing, and it's a little bit like Haydn on steroids. It's full of humor.
Yeah.
But it goes way beyond what Haydn would have done.
Well, I love it. I just can't wait to hear it. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Ransom Wilson, flutist extraordinaire and conductor of the Redland Symphony. Now, I noticed, Maestro Wilson, on the website, the Redland Symphony has a new executive director, Kevin Eberle Noel. Can you tell us a little bit about him and why you might be excited about his new role with the organization?
Yes, he's already having a huge effect on us. He actually went to the University of Redlands as a student.
Nice.
Many years ago. He's a bassoon player.
Mm-hmm.
And he got his master's there, and then he went to UNLV, Las Vegas, and got a DMA in arts administration.
Cool.
And at that point, he became also the, I guess, personnel manager of the Las Vegas Philharmonic. And he was wildly successful in that job and learned a great deal. And then he got a job with the Palm Beach Opera down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And he was their education director. So he has a lot of experience with both the business side and the more artistic side. And he really wanted to move back to Redlands, where he was born.
Aww.
And he's already just having a great effect on us. You know, we're all having to up our game because he's so good at what he does. And I hope we can hang on to him for a long time.
I do, too.
Because he's the kind of person who's going to end up in a big situation like L.A. Fuller or something. You know, he's really that talented.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear.
Yeah, we're enjoying him. We're enjoying him fully.
That is fantastic. Congratulations. I'm so excited for the organization.
Thanks.
Getting a little personal before we close, or maybe just probing for our Ransom Wilson fans, what are some of the items next up on your docket? Are you flying around? Do you have concertos or masterclasses in exotic places? What's next for you in addition to the Redlands Symphony?
Although I moved to Palm Springs just over a year ago,
mm-hmm.
I've accepted an endowed professorship in conducting at the University of Alabama.
Oh, wow.
And so I have to move there. So in the process of moving there.
Oh, goodness. Just to be clear, you're not leaving the Redland Symphony, right?
I am not. I'm not. I love it here. And it just means it'll be like before. I'll just be traveling here. But no, in fact, the University of Alabama has been very clear. They want me to keep all of my professional engagements. They want to have a school where the faculty is active in the field. So I'm thrilled about that. I get cake and eat it too.
I was going to say, what a wonderful opportunity for you and for your future students. That sounds great.
It's a very exciting thing. First of all, it's in my hometown.
Oh, nice.
So it's a kind of full circle kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's the first endowed position in the arts at the whole university. So they're treating it as something very important. In addition to conducting the school orchestra, which is called the Huxford Symphony, mm-hmm. Named after the woman who supports it, and also I create a whole new degree program in conducting.
Wow.
It's a famous band school because of the football, but they've never had an orchestral conducting degree, so I'm starting this whole thing. So that's very exciting for me. Because I've taught conducting actually for years, but never kind of been given a position to do that. So I'm really excited about it. And I'm afraid it does mean that in a couple of years, I'm going to be giving up the flute entirely.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's time. You know, it's the small muscles in the face don't last forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know so many performers who should have stopped 10 years before they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be one of those. I want to be one of the ones that, I want to be like Beverly Sills, who said, okay, I'm going to retire while everybody's still applauding. So that's my strategy.
Good
but
for
I do
you.
Have a, I do have a splashy farewell concert planned for Lincoln Center in 2024-25. I can't say more about that, but it's going to be a big deal.
Well, keep us posted, because you've got fans, and who knows who would want to fly out there and see your farewell swan song. That sounds incredible.
Well, we'll see. I'll let you know.
Maestro Ransom Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today on Musically Speaking. It's always a joy chatting with you about your life and your career in the Redlands Symphony. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We'll be posting the Redlands Symphony website and other pertinent information mentioned in the show about Redlands Symphony and Ransom Wilson online at kvcrnews.org/musicallyspeaking. Thanks again to Ransom Wilson for chatting with us today. We hope to see you at Memorial Chapel on April 8th. Musically Speaking is a production of KVCR News in collaboration with San Bernardino Valley College. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/musicallyspeaking. You can also listen on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search Musically Speaking on your favorite streaming service. This month's episode was edited by Rick Dulock. Technical website and social media support come from Jessica Greenwell, Tim Steidel, Sean Houlihan, and Natasha Coles. Our student assistant is Tatiana Jennings. I do hope you'll join us next month on the fourth Saturday and following Monday for our next episode of Musically Speaking. I'm your host, Margaret Worsley. Thanks for listening.